Welcome to Winning the Moment, the podcast that explores the art of living the life you want and becoming the person you want to be. Your host, Cody Adent, is a published author and the mind behind the book, Winning the Moment. This isn't just a podcast. It's a guide and a roadmap to inspire and empower you to conquer life's challenges, embrace your wins, learn from your losses, and make the most of every single moment in your life.
Welcome back to Winning the Moment. This is episode 45, and I have Brad Harker with me, and we go on an incredible journey of growth, getting curious, experiencing our emotions, how to incorporate breath work. There's so many incredible tips. I don't even know where to start. And we're also going to give you an amazing book list with four books that you have to read to start your journey towards growth. Stay tuned, like, and listen. You are going to absolutely love this episode. Wherever you are and however you're listening, thank you so much for being back with us on another episode of Winning the Moment. I'm super excited about today. This is episode 43. I have Brad Harker, who is an incredible growth coach and someone who's in the community that I live in. And I've seen him speak. I've seen some of his breakouts. I've seen his amazing content. I've got some friends of mine who work with him for growth. And I have yet to meet him in any real capacity. So Brad, thanks for being here. I'm so excited.
It's a pleasure. Honor. Thank you.
So let's talk about kind of your journey a little bit, because I'm really curious. The first time I saw you speak, I believe it was on sales. Mm-hmm. And that may have been a St. George Economic Summit. That was like 3 or 4 years ago. You were one of the breakout speakers. And so I remember at the time being like, oh, because I have a big sales background. So I was really interested in that. And then I feel like you've moved into that growth coach space. But let's talk about your background and how you got started.
Yeah. So I'm originally from Calgary, Canada.
Okay.
Which is a lot colder than it is here.
Yeah. What brought you to Utah?
You know, my mom's whole side is American. And okay. It's weird. I had cousins that lived in Houston, Texas. And every time I was in Houston or any part, we had a cabin in Montana. So just, okay. I felt a pull. It was weird.
Interesting.
I knew I was never going to stay there.
Interesting.
I mean, 30 or 40 below in the winter is no one's.
Yeah, I had a friend who lived in Minnesota, like right on the border of Canada, and I'd talk to him, and he'd be like, oh, it's 17 below today. It's like, what are you doing, dude? I'm golfing.
You were playing hockey outside.
Yeah, you got to move, man.
So it was weird. I always knew that I was not going to settle there, and went to BYU, met my wife, and kind of settled in Utah, and then got into real estate. Was kind of the early, well, I was summer sales before that.
I wondered if you did the summer. What were you selling at the time?
Alarms.
Alarms.
Way back in the day.
Did you do a mission?
I did.
You did. Okay. Yeah. I feel like that just prepares
for sure.
Yeah. Guys to just be great salespeople, you know, and you can transition that experience, because the thing about a mission is I guess you could quit, but most people don't.
Yeah.
And so it really builds that discipline that is so necessary, and you're getting lots of no's. You're learning how to get turned down 90% of the time, which to be a great salesperson, you got to be able to take a no and not let it break you.
No question. Yeah. And it's interesting. I was like emotionally, mentally, like I was successful. I did really well, but it was hard for me. I mean, this will come out, I'm sure, in the conversation, but like mentally, I was hard on myself. Always have been through, you know, a lot. And so navigating that dynamic as a missionary wasn't even as hard for me as it was in sales to really
interesting
get yourself back in that groove. And always just when you're kind of carrying a lot of doubt, a lot of shame, a lot of whatever, right? You can really get in your own way. And so that was a good experience for me to start breaking through that and working through that. And I gravitated to sales, not because I think I was, you know, this textbook amazing salesperson. I was gritty. I worked hard and I was really good at communicating. That was one of the gifts of my early years, was I was like Jason Bourne level awareness, right? And so really good at reading people, really good at understanding how to connect and get in rapport with them. And so it played well. And I had a good kind of kickoff to that. I was in that industry for probably about 4 or 5 years.
The like alarms?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yeah. Helped. We tried to start one. We sold it a couple of years later. It wasn't thriving. Went over there as a partner and just was like, this is not my scene. For whatever reason, I just struggled to really find joy and happiness in that industry. Yeah. So I left. I went back. I finished my degree at BYU. I dropped out for a few years and got into real estate. And that was about 04. So I got to just
ride that boom.
Just the top, and then just slammed me. I lost everything
in real estate.
And that was...
Was that up north?
Uh-huh. Well, I was up north, and the first project I put under contract was a $4.5 million subdivision. Just
wow.
And the idea was you flip all the lots before you close. You know, you've got your money to take it down. You've got all the lots pre-sold, and it's just like a wham, bam, and you're done. And my partner backed out after the earnest money went hard, and I had to flip that thing. I had to flip $4.5 million in 61 days. And
wow.
I got it done on the last day.
Wow.
Made a little bit of money, and I was like, this is awesome. I mean, I can do this. So anyways.
Did you actually make a little bit, or did you make a lot of it?
No, I made a little bit.
Okay.
I was, at that point, I was just like, I got to get away from this, you know?
Yeah. You were like happy to break even.
I was happy to break
get even. Get it behind
get
you.
Everybody, get yeah. the earnest money back and make a little bit. So for me, and then I moved up to Idaho for a few years and got and stayed in real estate. And that's when the market tanked. And it's the worst place to be when the market crashes. And so
yeah.
long story short is I actually came here, St. George, in 2009. After all the banks had been shut down and were just getting fallen apart.
Yeah.
The real estate market was in shambles. And I was part of a group that was liquidating one of the big portfolios of assets that the FDIC had taken over.
Okay. From like the bad mortgages?
Exactly. Yeah. And so it was $1 billion of toxic real estate. And a lot of it was right here in St. George. And then I spent the next 5 years, and there's a really cool story about that, which we can get into another time. But like I spent the next 5 years just liquidating, just developing, refurbishing, figuring out how do we liquidate 6,000 properties in 17 wow. states. It was a riot. It was cool.
What I mean, a wild time.
What hey, a wild
sorry
time.
Sorry to interrupt. Brad, could you pull that mic a little bit more in front of your mouth?
Yeah. Like that?
Yeah. There you go. Perfect. Thank you.
And so it was really interesting to just navigate that dynamic. I stayed in real estate for a couple of years, and then I was just like, I'm done. I'm ready.
So were you kind of like flipping houses, or were you just the broker? Or?
No, I was putting money together for subdivisions.
Oh, okay.
So I never really did residential real estate. I was always acquisition, development, and construction.
Even in 2009 when you're here in St. George with all those properties?
Yeah. Okay. At that point, it was just, these are toxic assets that bank was crazy that we took over. They were lending a ton of money before the projects were even developed. So what we had was like a $10 million loan and
asset
that was worth $1 million maybe.
Wild.
And then a guy that could guarantee maybe $1 million, but he was broke too at that point.
Yeah.
So we were just trying to figure out how do we maximize the return on this property? And sometimes we would redevelop it, but often we would just sell it and just get it going again. So people were buying assets at 20 or 30 cents on the dollar.
I know, it's crazy. I have a client that we worked with at that time, like bought all this amazing land in Colorado City, where he got one piece of land, which now is Water Canyon Winery. It's like absolutely stunningly beautiful. He's like, I bought this land for less than it would have cost to build the wall around it.
Yeah.
You know, like it was just free, it's basically.
True story. Yeah. So that was fun. And then I kind of got to a point where I just said, I know everybody's coming back. I'm like a problem solver. I like solving and just being in chaos and making, organizing it, fixing it.
Sure.
And so I know when things really sort of stabilized, I took a year off. I wrote a book and I said, this is when I launched my coaching business, which is what I always wanted to do. And then I quickly got scooped up by a company called Printer Logic, which is now Vasion.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Spent 5.5 years there as the VP of strategic growth. And I was really just an entrepreneur in residence.
And Vasion grew to be, I mean, it's a massive company.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been on a steady,
yeah,
steady, awesome climb. And then about 4 years ago, I just said, okay, it's time to go on my own. And I actually left and I started advising just a lot of different businesses. A lot of them were here in St. George on strategies of growth. A lot of it was sales. And it just kind of got to a point where the CEO or the owner of the business would say, hey, Brad, can we talk like just me? I feel like I'm the problem. I appreciate what you're doing in the business, but I feel like I've got some stuff that I need to work on.
Interesting.
And that was really—
So you kind of like fell into that growth
totally
coaching a little bit.
It, yeah. And
wow.
I did it a lot. Like I recognized the passion for it, but I never really organized a model for it, you know?
Yeah.
And it just sort of, like 95% of my business is referral based.
Well, and I think when you're in sales for a long time and you get in sales leadership, you are growth coaching all of your employees,
for sure.
Right? So even though like that's, you're not doing it in the capacity you're doing it now, that is ultimately the activity of what you're doing,
no question.
Right? And so you've got decades of experience in helping people grow.
Well, and that's the thing. I've coached, you know, thousands of sales reps. And what I've learned is that, you know, most people know how to sell. They know the technique. Then they usually know their product. The biggest differentiator, I think, is mindset.
Yeah.
When you can really help anybody, an executive, a sales professional, just a homemaker at home, really understand how to leverage and unlock their mind and get out of their own way. their sales double. Their growth is inevitable because this is so much more significant than technique.
Oh, yeah. I tell people all the time, like, people are so focused on exercising their body, which is very important, but they neglect their mind. You know, and it's like, you gotta put as much intention into your mental strength as you do into your physical strength, you know? And I try and even like, I can see it in my daughter already at 10, where she is creating all these obstacles for herself that aren't real, but she's creating them. And so I'm really trying to help her like realize that how important her thoughts are. And my wife took my son who's 7 to Legoland last week. This was the first time my daughter was ever away from her brother for more than a night. And so she was really struggling. And it was Thursday night. We're coming home from the Utah Tech basketball game. And my wife had mistakenly told her that she may come home Saturday. And so she's so focused on Saturday, right? Mm-hmm. Instead of coming home Sunday. And she asked me, well, you know, maybe mom will come home Saturday. I said, Liv, it is not Saturday. It's Thursday and you and I just had a great night and we're having a bunch of fun together. Mm. Why are you worried about something that isn't even yet real? Like, be right here with me and focus on this and don't put any fear or anxiety in something that hasn't even happened yet.
I love it.
Let Saturday happen when Saturday happens.
Yeah.
Right now, we know she's not coming home right now. You and I are going to go home. We're going to get you ready for bed. We're going to watch a show together. Like, focus on that. Be where you are.
For sure.
Instead of being somewhere you're not.
Oh, if somebody could have taught me how to be in the present moment at any stage of my life
prior
to the last few years, it would have been transformational.
I did a coaching a couple weeks ago for this group of executives, and this one gal was talking about like her stress and anxiety, and I said, none of that is real because stress is everything that's already happened, and anxiety is the things that you're afraid of happening. Mm-hmm. So if you're present, then those things don't exist. Like when you're truly in the moment, like whatever I have going on in my life that isn't this, it's not real right now because the only thing that matters is our conversation because that's the only thing I'm doing. It doesn't matter what my clients are going to do 3 weeks from today.
Yeah.
You know, I can't change it. It's the only thing I have control over is this conversation with you.
I love that. And I think that's what, I mean, for me, when I'm coaching, when I'm with a client one-on-one, you know, it's present moment. I'm locked in. I'm there and I feel different, right? My whole world shifts in that moment. And I think there's not a lot of times in my life or my career where I actually felt that present, you know, that connected to that moment. And it's amazing what happens when you lock in like that.
Well, I think that's what I found with podcasts, because if you and I were friends and we were just like, oh, let's get together and catch up. Well, if my phone went off, I would check it,
totally,
you know, like without even a second of like, I wouldn't feel bad about it at all. You know, maybe we go and we have a drink or something. And so then that diminishes your level of presence. But when you sit in a podcast like, and you connect with someone for 60 minutes and the things that strangers have shared with me on this podcast, you know, talking about topics as severe as suicide, and I don't even know them.
Yeah.
But it's like, wow. And that really showed me like, man, how terrifying to know that all it takes is 60 minutes of a conversation for someone to get to that point.
Yeah.
But we just all are so surface level. We very rarely connect in this capacity, you know?
Well, I think I saw the episode with Aaron. You had all your parasites on the table here. that's vulnerable.
Do you know Aaron?
Yeah.
Yeah. She's amazing.
Yeah.
Have you done the cleanse?
I haven't. No.
I think McRae did it. Yeah.
No, I've got a good friend of mine, Tav, that he introduced me, told me all about her. And so,
yeah, it's amazing. And that was such a fun episode. I really enjoyed it because she did have like that, you know, the visible, like, well, this is crazy, you know? Yeah. So, okay. I'm really curious about diving into the growth coaching, because one thing I've realized in doing this podcast is, so I had this one gentleman on, and he is spending $250,000 a year on growth for himself. Mm-hmm. Obviously he's at a different level of income that affords him that opportunity. But as I thought about it, it's like, wow, that's like creating that wealth gap because he's already ahead. And now even if I'm smarter, have a better work ethic, all of those things, I could never catch him because he's spending so much development and growth. You know, it's just like, if you get a physical trainer, I would be so much more fit than I would be if I tried to do it on my own. Mm-hmm. But I don't think that many people understand investing in themselves for growth. And oftentimes they may do something else, you know, some outside thing, thinking like, oh, this investment in crypto or whatever is going to get me there. But if they took that same investment and put it in themselves, they'd probably get further. So I would love for you to kind of dive into your philosophy on that and who you think like your ideal customer is for you.
Yeah. I may have to bring me back because it sparked a thought for me. And, you know, I think it's so interesting. We're early in this in so many ways. There's a great book called The Body Keeps the Score. Bessel van der Kolk is the author. He's an amazing and really well-known I'm sure he's a psychologist, just all about trauma. It's all about healing, right? And, you know, he talks about in his book just how in the, like, World War One, even, you know, an early war era, 1800s, 1900s, we didn't have a framework for trauma in the in our culture, in our very civilized culture. So we called it shell-shocked, and we just thought they were sort of broken.
Yeah.
We didn't realize that they can heal, you know, and so we don't have much of an awareness or an appreciation for the work that one can do on themselves to heal, to strengthen their mind, right?
Yeah.
And so it's easy for us to sort of look at, you know, even within our own country, some of the cultures that are severely, severely hindered, you know, and they've been through horrific things. And we can see just how hard it is for some people that are born into poverty or don't have those opportunities, you know, for how hard it is for them to just even compete in this culture that we live in. But what we don't understand, I think we still don't fully realize, people that have been through significant trauma and conflict in their lives, the devastating impact, especially when it's developmental trauma, meaning it's early in their life when their brain is still forming, right?
Yeah.
We don't really fully appreciate yet, I think, or fully embrace just how difficult it is for them to function, to operate, to succeed in a culture like this. And so I believe, and that's why it makes it so hard. Marketing for what I do is so hard because people often aren't ready to recognize the problem. They want to, just like you said, they want to gravitate to social media. What are people doing?
Well, yeah.
It's, you know, it's, there's so much about that that is a mask or sort of an escape from
yeah.
what's really needing to be fixed. And that is just self-awareness, self-consciousness of how I feel and what I've been through in my life. And what needs to heal, you know, what I can do to become a powerful human. And you're exactly right. People with money, they like coaching's expensive, right? But they have that ability to invest in themselves, and you can't quantify that growth. It's different, just like you said.
Yeah. Well, I had, so when my book came out, what's the title of your book, by the way?
The Laws of Influence.
Laws of Influence. So I'm going to tell this quick story. I want to jump into that. But so I, when my book came out, I was like, well, I want to be a speaker. That's what I really want to do. Like, everything is built around this brand and around this premise of my message. But I really want to be a speaker. And we had this, I'm a part of this, business group, EOS, our business manager, his name is Craig Andrews. He's awesome. So he's like you for a business. And then maybe you still do that too. And he had this gentleman come and speak to us. His name was Michael Alasso. And he was so different than anyone had ever seen. He was like, blew me away. And so my book had like literally just came out. It came out January 3rd, and this was sometime in January. So I went up to him and I was like, how do you do this? You know, how do you become so dynamic as you are? And he's also has a theater background. So he's very different than me, very out there, funny, goofy, like singing songs, like just so unique. And so he's like, oh, and he tells me a story. He's like, well, you can work with me if you want. And I thought like, man, I have to do that because right. How am I going to become a better speaker if I don't have someone to show me? And he was expensive too. I think he was maybe $1,500 a month and he does it for like 3 months. And so I was like, oh gosh, $4,500. So then I was like, well, I just need to find a client who's going to pay me. And then that I'll use that money to pay for Michael. And I was on an airplane ride to Salt Lake to go to a jazz game. And the gal next to me, I could see on her phone, she was like writing notes for a speech. And so we got talking, found out she was talking at South by Southwest and she didn't have a brand or anything. And I had my iPad up and she saw our team and I was like, oh, well, I can help you with that. Mm. So I charged her $5,000, built her brand and her logo and her colors typography. And I just used that money to invest in Michael. And in doing that, then I went through his program, which really made a difference for me as a speaker. And then he's a part of Vistage. You know what Vistage is?
I've heard of it.
So Vistage is like a C-suite executive group that helps, you know, CEOs, CFOs, things like that. And so they're all over the U.S. and the boards are usually anywhere from like 8 to 20 people. And they're from all different industries and they have a chair and they have 12 meetings a year, 8 of which they have a speaker come to it. And they're all just working on their business versus in their business. And so that's where he got his start, was through Vistage. He won like the best speaker award at Vistage. He does like 111 executive coachings a year. And so in doing his training with him, then he recommended me to a chair. And so I got to go and put my foot in the water basically to see if I could be approved as a Vistage speaker. You have to do your first 3 for free as they vet you to make sure you're good enough. And I just finalized that. So now I'm officially a Vistage speaker, which had I not invested in myself with Michael,
right,
I would have never been there. Yeah. And I wouldn't have been able to do the talks that I've done. And it was just such a an amazing moment to see, like, I bet, because it's hard to bet on yourself.
For sure.
Because we all have self-doubt.
Yeah.
You know, and when you do that, there is a little bit of fear that exists, but I just had to lean into it. And through doing that, I've now had this incredible return that I wouldn't have ever moved my professional career forward had I not taken that investment.
I love it. Yeah. And that's, you know, your question originally was, you know, what's the target audience for me, right? And I think that's the moment every client I've ever met with has said to me in that first meeting that we have, the word stuck. At some point they just say, I feel stuck. I know there's more out there. I want to grow. I'm recognizing how this is getting in the way. You know, a lot of my clients are business driven people.
Yeah.
You know, they're not always. I've worked with a lot of interesting, almost more of my clients are women than men.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So it's usually at least 50-50, if not a little bit skewed on the female side. And you know, there's always some shift that's happening in their life. Something has happened that was hard, or they're wanting to do something that's big, or they're just sort of becoming aware of something that they're stuck on and that they're working through. And that word always comes up. I feel stuck. And for me, then it's just really a function of, okay, well then what's the game plan? You know, what's the strategy? I don't have like this set regimen. Some of my clients are 3 months. Some of them I've been with for over a year.
Yeah.
You know, and it's really just a function of, okay, well, let's go back in time. Let's find that version of you that was invincible. Like, who are you actually, right?
Yeah, it's a hard question to answer.
It's a beautiful question to explore, right?
Yeah.
And as you do that, and then you understand, okay, and what's your story? What have you been through? What's happened along the way? When did you lose yourself? And in what ways have you put on a mask, or in what ways are you showing up a certain way because that's what you've learned to do to be seen or to be okay, to be safe? And how do we now unwind all of the strategies that you've learned, your ego has learned to deploy to navigate your life that may not be serving you? And it's an incredible process, you know?
Yeah, it's a fascinating thought exercise. Because even as I did this, and so I never had social media before, before my podcast, and before my book, like I didn't participate in that space at all. And then as the book came out, I was like, all right, I got to show up here, like to get this voice heard and to share my message. And it was so challenging realizing that I didn't really know how to be me. Because as you sit behind this microphone, the only thing that I know is the other people who sit behind the microphone. So it's like, am I trying to be Joe Rogan? Am I trying to be Alex Hormozi? Like, how do I want my socials to be? And there's so much, like, the only person I can be is me. But yet it's so hard to do that because it's like, do you even really know who you are? You know? And are you trying to be like the best version of you, which maybe isn't the authentic version of you? And then, you know, that's not going to be valuable. I never really felt that until I tried to be in this new space that I'm in now. Mm. And it really created that conscious thought of mine of like, man, what does it mean to be who you are?
Yeah. It's inspiring to watch you. Like I back when I was getting started, you know who Ryan Mickler is?
No.
Order of Man. He's really created quite an impressive following, quite an impressive group. He wrote a book called Sovereignty, and I think he's got another one. Anyways, it was really interesting to see someone so dialed into his zone, his lane.
Yeah.
And to just have this deep connection to it so much that he was willing, everything he did was just pure, and it was focused on that. And I see that in you. I've been obviously watching you and noticing the stuff you're doing, the podcasting, everything. Like it just has traction and you can see it. There's just this momentum that you can't stop because there's so much identity and so much belief and alignment wrapped around the initiative. It's beautiful. It's really inspiring.
Well, thank you for that. And it's nice to hear that. I had someone reach out. So during the holidays, I stopped posting. And then it's kind of like one of those things like going to the gym where once you stop, then it's like, oh, it's been 3 months. I haven't been back. Yeah. It's kind of what happened with me as social media. And I have all this amazing content from these incredible people I've interviewed. And I just kind of stopped and I never got back into it. And then I was like, oh, I gotta get it back on track. And so I posted first time in like, I don't know, 2.5 months. And I get a text message from someone who saw me speak at Utah Tech and like one of the business classes and said, like, I just want to let you know I've thought about your talk ever since that day I met you. I started a real estate career. I also started like a pool business and I just love your content and thank you for doing what you're doing. And it was like, it was for me a big believer in the universe and signs. And it was like, that was the universe's way of saying like, that's right. You should have been doing this. Cause it wasn't a coincidence that the first day I posted in 2.5 months, I get a text message from someone. I don't even know who the student is. Right. Yeah. But it was like that nice confirmation of like, cause sometimes it's hard to to know if you're making a difference.
Amen.
Because you're not going to know.
Yeah.
Like the people who are listening to this that I've never met, I don't know what their feedback is. I don't know that it may be helping them. In fact, my wife was at a party, and I think it was Tavish's mom maybe, but someone was like, oh, my mom loves the Winning the Moment podcast. Like she listens to it every week, you know? I don't know who that lady is, so I would have never received that feedback otherwise. And it's so easy to have that self-doubt and be like, well, you know, I don't know if it's worth it. I'm almost at a year, you know? There's obviously no monetization from it yet. It's just the effort of connection and trying to make a difference. And so it's nice to get those indications of like progress.
For sure. No, I ran a podcast for a year and it was really fun. I actually did two. I did one when I wrote my book and then I did another one and I didn't have good strategy back then. I'd even made it on like, you know, John Lee Dumas' podcast, EO Fire. And
yeah,
and it was like, there was a little bit of a run for me there.
Yeah.
And you know, I just didn't have that clarity of the strategy. And so I did a podcast that was really focused on the business clients that I was coaching and that generated a lot of great, you know, contacts and opportunities, but man, the learning was incredible for me.
Yeah. Just
having those people, it was such a beautiful discipline to get people on the show and to interview them and to just get into their world. And man, I learned so much about the business. I learned so much about myself and I really found a passion for it. Like it's an art. This is a hard job. This is hard to do.
Yeah.
So yeah. I feel you deeply.
Sometimes driving in, you're like, oh man, I don't even want to do it today.
Yeah.
But it's kind of like the gym in that way too, where you don't want to go on your, you don't want to do it on your way in. Mm-hmm. But once it's over, you're like, that was awesome.
So glad I did.
You know, that. I yeah. loved it. Yeah. So it's just one of those disciplines. And I told myself, cause even like Alex Ramosi said, it took like 4 years before like anyone really like globally gave a shit about his podcast, you know? And it's one of those things that you know is just going to take time. I had the one that I would do a Spencer for Virtual GM, which is for our business. And that one had a return instantly because it was tied to a product, right? Like I'm not really selling anything mm-hmm. here. I have a book, but it's $18, you know, like you buying my book is, I'm going to get a dollar, you
for
know?
Sure. Oh, it's brutal.
So it's like, so I'm not selling anything other yeah. than just, you know, opportunity to get people's information, you know? And so it's like, it's a very difficult thing to monetize because I really don't have a path for it. And that wasn't even the intention, really. It was about sharing the message with as many people as I can and gathering as much data for the second book to say, you know, here's how all these people view things. And yeah. Take what you will.
Yeah, funny story. You mentioned Alex Ramosi. I had him on my podcast.
No way.
And this was back before, like, someone actually recommended him to me.
And, that's incredible.
And he's like, "Do you want? Are we doing video?" And I'm like, "Oh no, I just do audio." And I'm like kicking myself now that I didn't.
Oh clips, yeah.
He was just walking around in his. I think he was in Puerto Rico somewhere, is where he used to live, and he was just walking around, and it was the most chill podcast. It was amazing, and I misspelled his name on the show notes, and I because there was nothing you Googled him and you couldn't find anything. About
yeah.
him. He was not known at that point. He was doing Gym Launch, but. It was wild. And just to see that like true rocket ship.
That's incredible that you interviewed him before he is. I mean, now he's just like a titan.
Same guy though. Same guy. If you watched that, you'd think it was recent. Or if you listened to it, you'd think it was recent just because his approach hasn't changed.
I had never heard of him. And we were at a growth video conference, Spencer and I, 2 years ago. And he comes out on stage. I have no idea who he is. Didn't know about 100 million leads. Didn't know about the gym business. Like I literally had no idea. He comes out and like, I think Crocs and like long white socks.
And a little nose strip.
Cut off. This is before the nose strip.
Okay.
Cut off jean shorts, a wife beater and like a flannel
yeah.
short sleeve shirt. And I was like, who is this guy? And then he opens his mouth and I was like, whoa, this yeah. guy's amazing.
Yeah.
You know, it was like one of the best keynotes I've ever seen. And he's just so authentically him.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think presence. That's what makes yeah. it so good. So you've got all these avenues. So you've got your book. And then you've created some courses too, right?
Yeah.
You know, you have courses and then you've got your growth coaching and then you have your keynoting. Is there one that really has your passion behind it or is it kind of equally spread amongst
them? No. You know, this is an interesting story. Like I think about the podcast. I think about even the book. You know, I didn't do any of that right. Like I was not in the frame of mind in my personal journey to be ready to do those things. I needed to do it. And they've opened massive doors for
sure.
me. So there's no regrets. And
yeah.
But my passion is for sure the coaching and yeah. always has. I love working with businesses. I love helping things grow. That's for me, that's the dream. And that's what I'll do till the day I die. I'll do all kinds of things. I'm sure, you know, around that.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, I'm passionate, deeply passionate about helping people progress and helping organizations progress. So for me, that's my passion. Everything else is really ancillary and is a support to it. You know, with courses.
Okay, I gotcha.
I like creating courses because it's a great way for my clients to have content that they can. And honestly, I love the idea of selling content online because it opens the door for you to be able to fund, you know, to kind of take the pressure off of needing to have the client base to keep, you know, to hit your goals, right? It's not like it's a tough business for sure because you're the product and the business owner, right? And so to be able to create some leverage is always great, but I've just never really given it my focus. I'm just purist. I love being in front of people or in front of a company.
So as your as you do your keynote speeches, is your hope, is that like almost a lead source for your coaching that someone sees your keynote and like, this guy's awesome, I got to go?
Like, you know, what we talked about earlier, like in that moment, I'm there for everybody.
Yeah.
And I want to reach every soul in that room. But I know that there's going to be a handful, and I can usually see them as I'm speaking. Like there's a connection that's happening.
Yeah.
And then it's going to be the ones that come up to me afterwards that are very likely we're going to have a conversation. They may become a client.
Well, that's how it happened even for Spencer, because Breck and Spencer were, or no, I think Spencer wasn't there that day, but Breck saw it and he was like, you got to hire that guy for me. And then, and McCray's like, oh yeah, I work with him. He's amazing. And then, so we put that on like our level 10 meeting. And then Spencer's like, oh, I want to work with him. Mm-hmm. And then he pursued it. And that's how you guys ended up together. Yeah. But it was a direct correlation to the Rise Summit.
Yeah. And I don't have two clients that are alike.
Interesting.
And the journey isn't even remotely close. And I don't have, like, I refuse to have a set. This is what we're going to do for 3 or 6 months.
I like that. What's interesting is I could even see that with my coach, Michael, is I could tell he didn't have an agenda when the conversation started.
Yeah.
Like it was, everyone was different. It was never the same, but I always benefited from it. And at first I thought like, oh, I don't think he's taking this serious. Like, I don't feel like he has a plan. But I think the plan was not having a plan and allowing it to be what it was, which was really interesting. But I always got off of those hour long meetings having progressed in some capacity.
Yeah, I had a client send me a text. He's in solar. And he just said, to be honest with you, Brad, I didn't know where we were going in that conversation on Tuesday. And at the end of it, I still didn't really know, but I went out and had the very best day of my life.
And then the
next day, he kind of followed it up with a repeat. And he's just like, I don't know what that was, but that it broke something loose in me and it was awesome. You know,
that's incredible.
And so that's the kind of thing that I think is important in that present moment. I can't explain it, but you tap into this connection. You just sort of, you reach that moment of rapport and then something happens and you just really start to understand where they're going and what they need in that moment. And the conversation just takes shape and it's wild. When it's anchored to understanding how to help them get out of their own way, it always comes together. Obviously, there's models and there's frameworks that underpin everything, but it's such an organic process. It's such a fluid process. It's incredible.
Well, I think what's unique about what you do too is that you're genuinely there for their success. Mm. And that's actually pretty rare, because there's the people who truly love you, like your closest people who want you to succeed. And there's other people in your sphere who love it when you're trying to succeed because you're an underdog. But if your success surpasses them, sometimes it's hard for them to continue to want to support you in the capacity they did before your success. Yeah. And so I think in having someone that you know is genuinely happy for your growth, because that's such a rare thing to find, I think that that's probably a part of it too.
Oh, yeah. Like you know, working with McCray, for example, I mean, the guy just knows how to print money. He's Midas. Like he knows how to just make things work. Yeah. And it's inspiring, but it's also like, yeah, I'm glad I don't have ego in that moment, because it'd be like, well, I'm helping you, you know?
Yeah, right.
It could be uncomfortable. It could be hard. But when you truly just see the person and you know that like in every moment, in every person you meet, there's something that they could mentor you in and there's something you can mentor them in. Like we all need to recognize the beautiful balance. And it's not just about money and it's not just about personal growth and development. It's not just about speaking skills, right? There's such a broad array of skills and things that actually do matter. We just don't celebrate them, culturally speaking.
Yeah.
But they're significant and it's important.
Well, that reminds me, when I speak in college classrooms quite a bit, and I'll never forget this one time an SUU student raised their hand, says, how do you become successful? And my response was, well, that question is irrelevant for me to answer because you and I might define success differently.
Yeah.
And so I think that as a society, we just push people out and tell them, like, these are the things you want, these are the things you need, and here's how you do it. But so few people ever take a time to stop and think to themselves, well, what do I actually want? Yeah. You know, you just get started. And then, like, you have a family, and then you have kids, and now you're like, well, I got to keep this up because I can't do what I want to do because I got to do what I can do,
yeah.
You know? And so I feel like it's so important to take that moment for yourself and decide, what is it that you want?
Oh, for me, like I remember my vision boards, they all had at least $100 million on them. Like that was my goal. I think I legitimately wanted to be a billionaire, you know,
really
as a kid, and I wanted to just become the CEO of a big Fortune 500 company. And that
I wanted that.
Right. And that's going to be the thing. I remember being in a pretty executive role early in my career, in my 20s. I got fired after 6 months. I was not a fit for it. I was not built to be that person.
Yeah.
That's when I discovered personality systems. And that's when I really started looking at myself and saying, man, I maybe have some serious things I got to heal and I got to work on.
Yeah.
And it's been interesting. I've had some great years in real estate. I've had some huge deals in real estate. And I've always been amazed at just how lackluster those felt. You know, in the moment, that's awesome. The day later, it's like, okay, now what? You know, and I've just am slowly divorcing or sort of escaping that paradigm that money was success. Money is that measurement stick. It's for me, it's not. It's just, it can't be. It's never been.
Well, and I think what's unique about what you said is that's kind of like it's one of those I'll be happy when moments. Mm-hmm. So I talk about that in my book. Like don't set your happiness on a future event.
Yeah.
Because what happens is you get there and it's awesome and then it's over.
Yeah.
And if you're not as happy as you thought you're going to be, then you're really depressed. I realized it when I ran the St. George Marathon because all I wanted to do was finish it. And so I did this amazing thing where I ran literally every day for like 8 months, you know, 3 miles or more every single day. In pursuit of this one goal. And then I did it when it was over. It felt very deflating because it was like, it was over now.
Yeah.
And I never like took the time to appreciate all of this incredible work that I did along the way. I was so focused on the destination that I gave no value to the journey whatsoever. Like I didn't appreciate the effort I was putting in every day. That is not a thing I normally did. I didn't normally run that much every day. And so instead of like building all of that momentum and success and belief in myself, I really only looked at the end target. And so none of that value carried over because I really displayed this incredible amount of discipline. But because I didn't have any focus on the discipline, I only had focus on the race.
Yeah.
I lost all the value that I should have received.
Yeah. I just read The Alchemist for like the third time.
My favorite book.
Right. And I love that metaphor where he says, walk through my palace with this spoon of oil and don't let any oil drip off the spoon. And so he comes back and he's got the spoon full of oil and he says, well, did you observe all the beauties of my palace? And he said, I didn't see anything. I just made sure that I didn't spill any oil. So he says, well, now I want you to go through and I want you to just observe everything that's amazing about my palace. And then he comes back and the oil is gone. It's empty.
Yeah.
And it's like, you need to find the balance of like, have a goal, have an intention, but enjoy the moment, right? Enjoy the journey.
Yeah. It's funny. When I was working with Michael also, he's like, I'm confused on your premise because like, you got to have somewhere you're going. And I said, well, absolutely. I'm not saying don't have a goal. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying that goal needs to live far enough down the road. And you got to know what it is. It's got to be big. You know, like Jim Collins, good to great, big, hairy, audacious goal. Like it's got to be huge, but just make sure your activities daily align with what you need to do to get to that place. Yeah. But don't live in that place. Live where you are today and just know that there's a place you're going to end up, you know, but don't put your happiness on it because otherwise our mind doesn't know the difference between reality and thought. And so if we're telling our mind, I'll be happy when I get my new house. Well, then if you had a moment of happiness, your mind's going to remind you like, oh no, Brad, we don't have that house yet. You haven't earned the right to be happy. Remember, we said we're going to be happy now when we get there. So you can't be happy until, and sometimes we think it's like a badge of honor. Like, oh, I'm in the grind. I'm not even happy. Like I won't be satisfied until. Yeah. And when you say things like that, your mind remembers it and the mind wants us to be right. So it'll find all the reasons you shouldn't be satisfied or you shouldn't be happy because that's where you decided to shine your light.
Yeah. Yeah. It's well said.
So I feel like it's just this incredible paradigm. And I feel like without taking the time through a growth coach like yourself or reading like a book like The Alchemist can really shake something loose for people. You're just you're just not going to notice it because we live most of our lives in our subconscious. And so you're just going to go through it and never even realize the damage that you're causing.
Yeah. And like if someone wasn't in a position to go through the coaching, there's a few books that I have all my clients read. We kind of study together in the early stages.
Oh, I love that. Let's rip that list off.
Because that's ultimately my first focus with my clients is like creating consciousness and awareness of ego. You know, like, so you talked just now about all of these, you know, these mindsets, these limiting mindsets that they're saying, the grind is good, right?
Yeah.
They learned that somewhere. Somewhere they said, you can't enjoy this. You need to be working hard. You're not allowed to celebrate.
Right.
And that early, early memory kind of fed an egoic strategy within them that said, yeah, you're right. I shouldn't be allowed to celebrate. I need to grind. I'm not allowed to be happy. I can't have that balance. And then they carry that sometimes through their entire life, and they never realize it didn't need to be that way.
Yeah.
Nor was that even aligned for them.
Yeah.
So the first book that I used to start with and is The Big Leap. And to me, that's the highest level introduction to two concepts. The first is your zone of genius, which is what are you built to do? What are you amazing at? And what is ultimately the greatest leverage for you? And your upper limit, which is kind of an introduction to ego. What are the ways, like if you and your spouse, for example, you guys are just vibing, everything's great. And then all of a sudden it's like, this is going too good. And something comes up, some argument shows up. There's a great scene in Talladega Nights where they're at Applebee's at the end. And they brought his dad and he's just like, and he starts accusing the waitress of putting onions in his steak or something. And he's like, I think you meant to do it. And he just blows up the whole dinner for everybody.
Yeah.
And he's like, it's going too good. It can't be this good. And that's like, that's a subtle way the ego shows up. The next book is A New Earth by Eckhart Tolle.
Eckhart Tolle is amazing.
And I have so many people that hate it at first. You got to listen to it at about 1.5. But if you can just, if you're ready for that book, it'll rock your world.
Oh, yeah. New Earth and Power Now. Both of those are just like must reads.
Yeah. And the next one is Letting Go by David Hawkins. It's a really cool dive into all the stages of progression of growth, like shame, grief, apathy, neutrality, enlightenment, courage, love. It's a really beautiful book to look at ego from the state of like, how do we feel?
Yeah.
And how do our feelings and our state of mind, how does it run our show? And then when we get sort of into the deep integration of how do we start healing that, there's a book called No Bad Parts. And it's, what's his name? Richard. Why is it escaping me? Anyways, it'll come back to me. Anyways, it's an amazing book to really understand the dynamics. You're like, part of me wants to go to work today. Part of me doesn't want to. Part of me is
sure.
Like, there are parts within us. We're a little bit all schizophrenic. We have multiple personalities.
Yeah.
And those are just the voices of our ego that are all sort of seeking to protect who we are and keep us safe.
Oh, yeah. I think that's such a huge dynamic of like when we fall short of something, because our prehistoric brain only wants us to be safe and happy and comfortable, right? Like, so when your alarm goes off, it's part of your brain is telling you like, no, just stay in bed. It's warm. It's comfortable. You're happy here. You know, like it is like we are fighting our internal thoughts because our brain's mission is to put us in the least amount of harm as possible. Right. That's why sometimes we don't want to have to exert all this energy to exercise, because the brain is like, no, that's hard.
Yeah.
We just want it to be easy. Like we just want to sit on the couch, have some chips, watch some TV, don't even have to think. You know, that's what our brain wants us to do, because before it needed to do that because we could go outside and get, you know, killed by a saber-toothed tiger. But we don't have those things anymore that could end our lives.
Yeah.
But our brain doesn't know the difference.
Yeah. Yeah. So Richard Schwartz was the author of that last
book. Richard Schwartz.
Anyways, those books, they will help. They will inevitably open the door to the shadow. They're going to open a can for you.
Yeah.
And really help you confront your strategy. And that's, to me, that's beautiful. I host breathwork sessions, for example.
Yeah. I got to go to one of those. I hadn't yet because they're on Thursdays. And so during the football season, I was like, I can't do it, but I'm totally excited to do it. I've done it for the first time last year, about a year ago. And it's so phenomenal, because the one thing we all have in common as humans is we all breathe and the power in breath. And then like I read Wim Hof's book and some other one too. That was talking about like how important it is to breathe the right way. Cause like our nose is basically like this filtration system.
Yep.
And so if you're not breathing correctly, like you're introducing so many pathogens to your body.
Yeah.
And it's like, if I'm going to have to breathe anyways, why not learn how to harness it for the power that it is?
Yeah. Yeah. I get excited when people are experiencing emotion in breath work. And I get excited when my clients like are emotionally, like they're crying or they're like, I'm just like, okay, we're moving stuff.
Are you leading? Do you lead those?
Uh-huh.
You do. Okay. Yeah. That's cool. Where do you do it?
Just at my office.
Oh, at your office. Yeah. Where's your office at?
It's right off near campus. It's off 700.
Okay.
What is it? Honolulu Grill.
Oh, you're back in that business building back there? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I've got a really cool space. It was built for a summer sales office and we just have this huge open room and it's the ultimate, you know, studio for that.
That's awesome. Yeah. I'm definitely count me in for that. I'm for sure doing it.
It's incredible. I get texts all the time. They're like, I just discovered breathwork for the first time. This is amazing. And it's the last thing I would have thought I would be leading at any point in my life. Like if you'd said, Brad, you're going to become pretty woo-woo in the next few years. You're going to be leading breathwork sessions. I would have laughed at you.
Oh, yeah. If they would have told Summer Sales Brad that you're going to lead people in the power of breathing, you would have never believed it.
Oh, no way. And that everybody needs to learn how to breathe. Everybody.
I think part of what I love about it so much is I'm a big believer that we can fix anything that's broken inside of us because we broke it ourselves. So that means we have the ability to fix it. And that is such a great representation of what we can do with intentional thought and focus.
Yeah. Well, and coming from the state of self, like state management is the ultimate achievement in life. The ability to have something like, you know, what's his name? Viktor Frankl talks about between a stimulus and a response, there's a space. And that space is where we have choice. That's our freedom. And so nobody can make you mad. My kids don't believe that, but no one has that power over you.
Right.
But we've given our power to so many people in so many situations and so many things, and learning to experience life and to be able to have the management or the power to manage your state is the ultimate achievement. I mean, the word is equanimity, and it's the ability to just maintain your composure in the best and in the worst of times. That's such a powerful achievement. I think that's the greats, what they achieved, because no one has power over you anymore.
Yeah.
You're truly sovereign as a human.
Yeah. I remember when I was an executive, when I was really young, and this was in sales, in wireless sales, and our districts were all alphabetical. So we're in the Southwest. So it was like Southwest A, Southwest B, so on and so forth. And I was the last one. And our regional manager was on a tear on like our weekly call, right? Like everyone had a shit weekend. Mm-hmm. And so it starts with the first one. And she's just ripping him apart. And she's like, why did you fail? And he's putting all the blame on his team, right? Well, Brad's not doing good and Spencer's failing. And she's like, well, I thought Brad was on a PIP. Like what's the status of that? You know, I mean, just drilling everyone. And so the call has gone on at this point for probably an hour and a half before it gets to me. And I'm training a new district manager. And she goes, Cody, well, what happened in your district? I said, honestly, Sharon, I didn't show up for my team. Like, I just wasn't in it. I didn't give them the support that they needed. I didn't plan appropriately. Our schedules weren't really optimized. I had a couple managers that were off. And ultimately, it falls on me. Like, I'm going to do better and we'll do it again. She's like, okay, great, thanks. And the DM I'm training, like, looks at me. He's like, what just happened? I said, I'm the only one that took accountability.
Yeah.
Everyone else made it around about – they thought that by making it not about them, that they wouldn't be in trouble. But had they just taken that onus themselves, because at the end of the day, Sharon isn't ours, the regional at the time. She's not all those other people's managers. She's only responsible for you. So if you're saying all these things are out, that's basically you're saying I was perfect and my team sucked.
Yeah.
Right. So I got no room for improvement. It was just my team wasn't good. And no one had the ability at that time to see within themselves that it ends and starts with them. And I was just, so by doing that, my boss never cared because she knew at the end of the day, I was going to take ownership, good, bad, or indifferent.
Yeah, that's well said. Yeah.
I think especially in sales, you know, like I remember people saying, oh, it's slow. And that this was at Costco where they literally count how many customers come in every day. Mm-hmm. So someone would say that to me on the phone and then I'd say, oh, go do me a favor. Go up front and tell me when people came in the last hour. Call me back. So they call me like 1,000 people. I was like, wow, 1,000. That's amazing. Like, and you only need one person to sell a phone, right? Like, yeah, it's like crazy.
Yeah.
You know, like understand that you could have been better in that last hour. It's not how many people walked by your kiosk. It's how many people you interacted with.
Yeah.
You know, put their ownership on them.
Yeah. That's good leadership.
So are those your favorite books then? Or is there one book that really stands out as like, ooh, this is my favorite?
Oh, I can't answer that. There's just too many good books. Like one of my favorite books of all time is Think and Grow Rich.
Oh, I just gave that to my wife this week to read.
It just, that book, even if I'm not even reading it, just reading, opening that book, there's an energy about it. It just inspires me.
It's so good.
Science of Getting Rich is one of my favorites.
Oh, I've not read that one.
It's actually the book that sort of fueled The Secret when that all happened.
Oh, okay.
It was back in 1902 or three. Wallace Wattles is the author, and he was one of the pioneers of the law of attraction. And really talk, that's what he talked about. I mean, obviously Jesus talked about it, and I'm sure every you know, but
like, all the other disciples.
Right. So, but he really kind of created a framework for understanding the law of attraction and how we act in a certain way and how we connect with this formless substance, as he called it, and how gratitude is sort of the conduit that brings it to us. Like, he nailed it all. And then The Secret sort of hijacked it a little bit. But it's an amazing book. It's super quick. It's super short. And he wrote another book called The Science of Being Great. And they're just two incredible books about just how to be an amazing human and produce and create value. It's not about getting rich. It's about creating abundance. It's about serving people.
And you could define rich in a lot of different ways, for sure. Right? It doesn't have to be money.
Yeah.
I love the books that have existed for so long. Like I recently read Outwitting the Devil, which was written like forever ago. Yeah. And it's like, this is incredible, you know? And when some message can withstand the test of time, it's like, you know, that's hitting the core of what's important. And I think that did you write your book because you were an avid reader and books made a difference for you? Or what was your motivation for your book?
No, I actually ranked in the bottom like quarter of all applicants to BYU for language and arts. Like I was not a good student, and I wrote a book because books changed. Like, I went, you know, if we kind of go back in time to my early years, teenage years, I was in a dark place and I'd been through a lot of trauma at that point. And honestly, it was the future that kept me alive. It was the ability to dream and create and think about what I could do in my life, that it could be better than this. And so I just gravitated to books like How to Win Friends and Influence People and Think and Grow Rich, because those represented hope for me. And so what was interesting is I wrote my book, and I have this weird thing, like I forget movies I've watched a year ago. So I have, I mean, I probably read two or three books a month. I just like, I pour through books, and a lot of times I'll read them two or three times a year, the same book, just because I really want to learn from it. And so for me, what was interesting, I wrote my book largely because I felt like I want to coach and I want to mentor people and I need a platform. What is my platform? And so I really sort of put together, what are the things that I think? And for me, the premise of my book was, if I could go back in time to when I was in junior high school or high school, what are the things that I wish I would have learned that I didn't learn in school? And that was what the book became. And so it's 33 chapters in it. And there are 33 things that aren't a deep dive in any one of them, but they're the 33 things along the lines of finding purpose, how to communicate and connect with people, and then how to take initiative and grow in your life. Those are the three kind of pillars. And so for me, it was like, these are the things that you need to know. And what was so fun for me is I would go back and read books again. I'd be like, oh, that's where that came from.
Yeah.
I didn't hijack the thoughts, and I often reference those books, but I just really felt like these principles changed my life, and they did not come from a classroom.
Oh, 100%. I also struggled in school. I mean, I was like in the special ed classes up until like fourth grade. And then I finally figured out like human relations and how to use those dynamics in my favor to build relationships with teachers if they like you. Just like sales, you know, if they like you, they're going to buy from you. Teachers like you, they're going to be more lenient on you. And so I never even went to college. I just knew it wasn't the path for me. And I knew there was so much I didn't know. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, I'm just going to get every book on the topic I want to learn about because I don't know very much. And so I'll let these be my guidepost. And so I start my book off saying like, look, I don't know anything. This is just me regurgitating all of this information I've had in a way that I hope is digestible for you, you know, because at this point, is there any, you know, unique thoughts when there's so much literature out there. We're just taking a thought that someone else had and making it our own. Yeah. And I think that that's so valuable. And I think when you're like listening to this conversation, and if you're at a place where you can't, you know, spend the money to have a growth coach, well, you can spend $20 to buy a book.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, that's where it starts. That there was just so much great information out there. Like, think of, and like even Alex Hormozi, like what would you pay for 2 hours with him? It'd be an ungodly amount of money. But you can buy his book for $20.
Right.
It's the same thing.
And that's exactly right. I wouldn't pay that. I wouldn't pay for that 2 hours with him because I think I could learn more from all the things he's created, to your point.
Yeah.
That would be so much more impactful. And that's like, for me, honestly, if you're just like, I'm at a point in my life where I really need to make some shifts in my life, well, come to Breathwork. It's $30. I mean, if you can't afford that, just text me and you can come for free.
Like, yeah.
I don't make money doing breath work.
Right.
But come and just discover and feel what it feels like to be in self and to connect with you in a way you probably haven't for a decade in your life.
Yeah.
And watch what happens when you do that. I mean, the first time I did it, I was sobbing like a baby within 5 minutes. Like, I had so much stuff that was, and I've been in therapy for 10 years and I was just like, so much energy was coming out of me, blew my mind. And I fell in love with the practice. So there's so much you can do to like figure out and start connecting with you and learn how to love you and appreciate who you are and give yourself the grace to say, I deserve to do work on me, you know?
Yeah. Well, if you don't love yourself, it's gonna be hard for anyone else to love you.
That's like my biggest gripe with the Bible is like the two great commandments are love God and love your neighbor. I think you can't do either of those if you can't appreciate and love who you are.
Absolutely. It's amazing. You talk about crying. So my son's 7, I talked about that, and he does not want to cry in front of me.
Yeah.
Like, won't. Like, you can see him holding it back when he needs to let it out. So I got to leave the room and then he'll cry with his mom. And I didn't set that standard, right? Like, I never said don't cry or crying's weak or, you know. And I remember one day he asked me, like, have you ever cried, you know? And I realized, like, he'd never seen me cry because I genuinely don't cry because I'm pretty, you know, I'm pretty even keeled. But it's amazing that there's like already this trauma built in him where he feels like he shouldn't. And I don't even know where it came from, mm-hmm. because I've never told him not to, or like, stop crying. Like, you know, like my dad would tell me when I was a kid, you know, but somehow he still has that trauma of like, oh, if I cry, I'm going to be weak. And it's like, I don't know how to let him know it's okay. Yeah. But unless I'm crying myself, but I don't want to manufacture tears that aren't real. Any advice on that?
You know, it's interesting. Like, kids, how old is he?
7.
7. Like, kids at that age, like, their ego is not online, really.
Yeah.
You know, they're like in a hypnotic state, largely.
Yeah.
You know, in terms of brainwaves. Like, they're just sponges, and they're just soaking everything in. And it's really critical. I think about so many of the clients that I meet with, and it's most of the things that they're battling are the narratives that they were given in those formative years.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know. It's really important to just talk through it with him.
Yeah.
You know, and just say, listen, it's important. You know, maybe I don't, this is the way I was taught, but I want to teach you this way. You
yeah.
know? Just, it's, I don't know. It just talk through it. And that's the beautiful thing. If you can just let him feel like he's got the ability to ask those questions, you've already
yeah.
won.
Yeah, for sure. I told him, like, that's your body's way of saying I got energy in. That's got to get out.
Yeah.
You know, that's yeah. just coming in the form of tears.
Yeah. It, like, 2 generations ago, you weren't allowed to cry.
Well, I wasn't.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
And it's probably one of the most powerful tools that we have. Like, that, the whole premise of the book, Letting Go, that I talked about is our ego is like, we suppress everything we feel. Like, we've learned to think and not feel. And I can actually, you know, I felt like I built super highways around all of my pain in my life. And I knew how to logically navigate everything
yeah.
to not have to go there. But when I go there, it's amazing how healing it is. And that's the point, is we need to learn how to feel, and we need to stop thinking our way through everything. Because when you can just feel and cry, like, I'll go in my truck sometimes when I'm struggling and I'll just like scream at the top of my lungs. Like, I've always had a little bit of anger rage in me from sure. a very early age. I've learned to control it, but I've also learned to not suppress it.
Yeah. Cause then it might come out in a worse way, right? You're not hurting anyone screaming in your truck.
But my gosh, what releases, like, I swear, you know, birds in the Amazon are, you know, fleeing the trees when I let it out. But for me, that emotional release resolves so much. Like, my body just says, okay, that is now done. We don't need to hang on to that. We can move on. And I feel it. And we're so afraid to express and be how we are feeling. And so we learn to not. And so if you can teach your kids to just allow them to feel, like, just let them be pissed off. And if they're fighting, just have them stop fighting, but let them still be pissed off.
Yeah.
And let them be angry and let them feel hurt. And then show them how they can recover from that, but let them feel, and it will change their lives.
I really love what you said about thinking your way through emotion, because I've never been very emotional. And because I'm not emotional, I've also not been very empathetic, mm-hmm. because like, someone will bring a problem that like they're really struggling with. And I'm like, well, yeah, logically just 2 + 2 = 4. So mm-hmm. it's all good, you know, but that's not what they're saying. They're not upset because of a logical reason. They're upset because of an emotional reason. And I've gotten better with it at time, but I never really understood why I wasn't empathetic, you know, like when I knew logically I should be, but I wasn't. And as I've gotten better, as I try to work on it, what you just uncovered for me is it's, I was just thinking through it. Mm-hmm. I wasn't feeling it. I was just thinking about like, oh, this person feels this way and we got to get them back to here. And the way to do that is through this versus like feeling what it was. So that's really interesting actually.
Yeah. And try it and just ask yourself, does this feel organic to me? Does this like, have I, like, cause you may feel like I may not naturally be like temperamentally speaking. I may not be an empathetic person. I happen to be a very empathetic, feeling driven person. And I often struggle with, my wife told me I was sensitive once and I felt like it was the deepest insult, you know?
Yeah.
And, but today I see that as a superpower for me. Like I can really connect to people and I can get into their world in a beautiful way. And so I'm grateful for that, but not everybody's like that. And so there's certainly an aspect of the humanity of the connection, but I think it's important, yeah, to sit with that and just say what feels, you know, if I was to step outside of all the paradigms and everything I think I've known and been taught, how would I want to feel in this moment? And that can be a really interesting exploration for you.
Yeah, it's kind of back to like, what is reality? You know what I mean? Is it the reality that I think that I know or the reality that I'm experiencing? And they may be two separate things.
No, it's scary to consider just the overwhelming majority of people in this world, especially even in this country, aren't really aware and conscious of their ego.
Well, I think that's why breathing is so important, because a lot of what I'm talking about and my message is about being conscious and present, right? And I think that's why breathing is so impactful, because you pull away all the distractions and all the everything, and like it really forces you to be present in your body, which I think is why it has such a profound impact. And to know that you can do that at any time, whenever you want to.
Anytime.
You know what I mean? Well, I looked up at the clock and I was like, oh, the clock's broken. But we've met our time. It just went by so fast. Didn't even really get into any questions, but I can't let you leave without answering this one. And that is, how do you define success?
I define success by discovering who you are and really aligning with the purpose from which you're here, and then being able to make the unlimited, like to experience the fullness of that contribution to the people that you serve.
How do you best believe someone can discover who they are?
Get curious. Knowing thyself is the beginning of all wisdom. Wherever you need to start, like if you're willing to look inward and just start experiencing, read some of those books that I mentioned, but just get curious and just figure out, who am I? What makes me happy? What do I want to be doing? What does my life look like in 5 years? If I knew I couldn't fail, what would I do in my life?
Yeah.
Just get curious.
I love that. Get curious. What a great way to end it. Well, if people are listening to this and they are interested in the things that you have shared, what's the best way for them to connect with you?
Probably the easiest way is bradharker.com.
Okay.
From there, you can see breathwork. You can download courses. You can connect with me. It's the easiest way. And I'm on social. Most of my socials are Brad Harker.
Okay. Well, I will put those links in the show notes. So if you're listening and you want to connect with Brad, I highly recommend it. All those links will be down below. Brad, this was awesome. I mean, that, I honestly felt like we were 20 minutes in and it was 60. So thank you so much for being here.
Let's do it again. Thanks,
Absolutely.
Cody. Appreciate it.